Welcome to the MaxHack podcast, where we awaken together and share our greatest gifts with the world. My guest today is Rick Weinman, the present-day founder of the Vortex Healing Lineage. And in January, Rick and I recorded a podcast on the history of vortex healing, on energy healing, on Kundalini and the different energetic bodies. And today's episode will be focused on relationships, love, and sex from a vortex healing perspective, and what does all of that mean energetically. So I'm glad to have you back, Rick. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. In short, it means as humans, we're a mess.
So I would like to start that you give us a brief overview about how are actually people in a romantic relationship connected from a vortex healing perspective. Like, what are all these connections that we actually have that probably most of us are not really aware of?
So first of all, everyone is already connected because it's all one. And then connections can then get expressed through, there's energetic connections and there's consciousness connections. And a lot of people like to think in terms of karmic contracts. We don't believe in contracts. For us, you know, your karma is between you and God, basically. You know, there's no, you know, contract with other people. So if you had, let's say you had tortured someone in a past life, it doesn't mean that they have to torture you in a future life, or, you know, whatever that karma is for you, you know, you can get it, you know, on the street anywhere, basically. It's an open market to work that out. But people, you know, do have past life history, which then comes into play. Well, if they have that history, it comes into play when they get into relationship with each other. So if you were abused by someone in a past life and you're in an intimate relationship with them, there will be memory of that abuse, and, you know, it becomes part of the position you take in relation to the other person. And on a conscious level, if that's not conscious, then the other person may not understand why you have a certain defensiveness in relation to them, for instance. You know, so it can create, you know, certain kinds of confusion. But of course, on some level, we all know what's going on. And then once we're being sexual with someone, then other kinds of connections come in. There's what I call chakra resonance, where the sexuality creates this energetic resonance between many of the chakras. And that becomes a kind of glue or kind of tie, you know, creates a kind of a fixed connectedness in a certain way. And for people, especially before they have an awakening, there would be a very strong tendency to create what we call a second chakra cord. And these cords are created out of the attachment consciousness that's there, combined with kind of the survival consciousness for reproduction, that's part of the genetic system. And you end up having this cord, which is easier to understand in terms of a two-way cord. So a two-way cord is that my energy has gone out to you to hook up, and your energy has come to me to hook up, and so it's a two-way cord. And typically, after a relationship breaks up, these will naturally sort of fall apart. But here's an interesting story. It illustrates a cord back in my young days. So there was a woman who was in my sort of, you know, acquaintanceship circle, who I'd run into periodically, and I didn't really have that strong of an attraction to her. Never called her, she never called me. Ran into her one day, it was in Tucson, Arizona, and And she was in a phase where she was just wanting to sleep with a lot of different people. So, you know, I received, an open invite from her, and I wasn't in a relationship at the time, so I accepted, and we got together that night, and it was a no strings attached, you know, from her part. Well, after that, I couldn't get her out of my mind. This is a woman I never thought about. and suddenly I couldn't get her out of my mind. And finally I called her, maybe about 3 or 4 days later. And our first words were, "I was wondering when you were going to call," from this woman, no strings attached, who had never called me, who I had never called. And we got together that weekend, except she had a cold, so we didn't sleep together. And about 3 days later, I felt this pop in my field. And suddenly, everything shifted, and I went back to feeling however I felt before. That was my introduction to cord. So in sleeping with her, I created the second chakra cord that then, created this energetic entanglement and attachment, and kept her in my field. Along those lines, back when I had a practice, I worked with a woman who was very spaced out. She was all over the place. And I realized that for whatever reason, the various different men that she had been with, she had never let go of those cords. And so she was literally, those cords were keeping her consciousness here and there and there. You know, she was like spread out all over the place. So we released the cords one by one. And with each one, you could see she got more present, more centered, until finally we released the last one, and there she was.
How can people tell if they still have a second chakra attachment to another person?
Well, it's this thing where they break up with someone and they... Well, it's one of the possible things that's going on when you break up with someone, especially in the beginning of that, and you feel like you can't get them out of your mind, out of your field, out of your space. You know, that's usually a second chakra cord. Now, with long-term relationships, there's a lot more going on. There's what I call energetic body intermingling, where we have like a etheric, emotional, mental, spiritual body, and there's this sort of interfacing that happens in long-term relationships. You know, you talk about people have been together for a long time and they start to sort of look similar in a certain way. Some of that is this energetic body interfacing, and some of it is this consciousness patterning, where you start to pattern each other in terms of how consciousness works, which, you know, it makes the relationship kind of smoother. But then you break up and your consciousness is still in that patterning. So with that, you feel like the person's still in your field, and you've got the chakra resonance, even if the cords are gone, and you've got this. So there's all this stuff going on. You've got the energetic body interfacing as well. And so I remember there was a couple of friends of mine that had been in a relationship and they broke it off. They'd been married for years and they gotten to where they were at each other's throats all the time. And so we have this protocol at higher levels of vortex healing for helping to unhook all this stuff. Because literally it's like hooked in on so many levels. If you've been in a long-term relationship, you've gotten so hooked in that, you know, you don't feel like you've got your own space. So you're still reacting to the other person because they're in your field and all this stuff. And so I did this, that protocol with them and unhooked them. And suddenly they could feel.
What is this called from vortex healing? Like, what is this protocol called?
It's basically just relationship breakup protocol. Mm-hmm. Nothing fancy. Omega-3, do omega-3 on them. It's just a protocol for relationship breakup, which is sometimes useful even when people are in relationship, but mostly, there are other aspects. I mentioned some of the main ones, but there's other things going on too. Anyway, suddenly they felt themselves in their own space. It was like, oh, this is my space. And then they weren't at each other's throats anymore. Because, if you over time have developed a certain reactivity to the other person, it's like the other person is also almost like they're inside your field, so they're too close. You're reacting to them and they're too close, right? But if you can create your own space, now you've got a buffer. Now you're not going to react to them in the same kind of way. Now you've got the security and the emotional kind of integrativeness of your own space to kind of, give you a certain center and groundedness. So that along with this buffer, now you can treat the other person as an other person instead of someone who's, bugging you from the inside. And so, they're able to then, have a nice conversation with each other.
So you said in the beginning that in vortex healing, you don't believe that there are like contracts or karmas between souls over lifetimes,
Well,
right?
there's karma that happens as a result of interaction between beings, and there's a level, there's kind of a this vast karmic field in which all kinds of sort of unresolved interactions, the energy and consciousness of that sort of sit there, and so in that sense there is. But that's not like the major karma that people are usually talking about. The major karma being, you did this to me, I need to, or, I did this to you, now I'm going to have that done to me by you, right? That I don't believe in. And I don't believe in contracts. To me, it's all just the divine playing itself out. And it can play out. Past drama with whomever, it doesn't need to be played out with the person. And there may still be, residuals of, this sort of vaster karmic field of unresolved stuff. But, we have tools that can clear that out. The other stuff. So for us, there are different kinds of karma. There's the karma of conditioning, right? So every time I, let's say, get angry, that anger doesn't just go out into the world, but it also reinforces whatever anger I have inside, and I become conditioned by it, right? I can clear that inner conditioning through meditation, through healing tools, and so on. But that anger has also gone out into the world and is going to come back to me in some form. So that we call karma of events, right? Nothing we can do about that in general, right? Grace can modify that, and we see that happen. But in general, whatever goes out is going to come back around. And it doesn't have to come back around through that same person, but it's going to come back around in one way or another. And according to the divine, it can play out in different ways. So for instance, maybe I've killed a bunch of people in one life. Doesn't mean that, like let's say I have a life where I kill 10 people. Doesn't mean I have to be killed in 10 lives. Maybe I'll end up being a medic in the middle of a battlefield situation, in the middle of all this death and dying. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that can play out, and we don't get to choose it. That's all just, divine intention, playing it out at the highest level.
I would like to share with you a concept that I read about and heard about from the Trans-Himalayan teachings to hear the vortex healing perspective of that. And in the Trans-Himalayan teachings, they talk about that we are a group of souls and we have these 25 people or souls that we are somehow coming back in each life or quite often again and again. And we also have this bigger soul ashram of a thousand souls, which are like people we might be loosely connected with in every life, but we always have these 25 people of our core soul group that we meet in different, more intense relationships in our lives. What is your view on this?
You know, we have these different kinds of ways that things are organized on a human social level, and we like to project that onto spiritual planes. So I don't agree with that at all. People looking to create structure for themselves to feel like they're in control, which when we're in separation, we don't. So we want to have an idea of the structure, and if we can sort of stay with the same people, that makes us feel safer as well and more in control. And so to me, there's just a lot of projection there. To me, in reality, it's just divine play, and it plays out in a million different ways. There isn't this sort of fixed structure to the universe. There aren't these higher level hierarchies or council of this and council of that. And, this is, for me, all spiritual fantasy. And that's not to say that sometimes, we're not going to incarnate with people we've incarnated with before. You may have a situation where maybe two people have been family members, for a number of times, and then they're not. It's just, whatever the individual play is there for, however, I think the best analogy is think in terms of writing a novel. You can write a novel that's part of a series in which the same characters sort of play out for a while until the end of that series. And you can have where a novel is just complete in itself, and then you go on and you have completely different characters. To me, it's like that. It can, whatever they described, maybe there's, a group of beings for whom that was true for a certain period of time and then it wasn't. Just a possibility, although I probably not, but could have been.
I recently listened to this book. It's called Enlightened Sex by David Deda. And he describes three types of love, where he says people confuse this usually. He says there's love, there is falling in love, and then there's sexual polarity. And he defines just generally love just as, how present and open can you be in any situation with any being or with any moment? Like, how much can you merge into this and basically be one with that moment? This is how he describes love. Falling in love is what he says happens maybe once in your life, maybe two, three times if you're lucky. But this is where you meet another person and you feel deeply familiar, like you feel there's a deep connection, like you've already known each other for so long. And then he talks about the third category, sexual polarity, as this is like the, when you meet somebody who has like the opposite essence, like when you have a very masculine essence and somebody else is in their very feminine essence, there's a sexual polarity between the people. And I was wondering if in vortex healing, like, you have a view on what is actually sexual attraction versus why do you fall in love with people?
You don't have an official story around it, but I was actually going to write a book about some of these topics, but never got to it. So, first of all, love is part of the essence of everything. Everything is created out of love, and love is our true nature, right? So you know, in the deepest part of our being, we know love and we are love, and it has no object. It's not love for anything, it's just love, right? And so whatever Mr. Data is talking about with love, you know, that I can sort of go along with that. But it's not just about being present. There's a certain quality to it, which is what the word love refers to. But that quality can become a certain way of being present and open to, you know, everything that's there. It's our own real, it's our own true nature. And when we're in our own true nature, naturally we're expressing that, right? And at the same time, someone can be in that place and not be very grounded, in which case they're not necessarily being very present with whomever, whatever. They're very open, but not necessarily present. The two don't have to go along together. You know, as someone who spent a lot of years out of body, you know, I can tell you for sure, one can get into a very open place where one isn't very present. Now, falling in love, you can't, so love itself comes from a place of the oneness of what we are. You know, falling in love needs separation as part of the dynamic of it, right? Because it's falling towards something that's other than you, right? And so falling in love happens where you're, first of all, not in a place of just love, because in that place of love, there isn't falling in love, you're already love, right? So falling in love happens from...
Do you think that's why we're experiencing duality? So we can fall in love with somebody else?
We experience dualities because the divine wants us to experience duality as part of its own experience of playing itself out and having this experience. It's just what is. But within what is, we're in a place of experiencing ourselves as separate, and we're typically not in this place of just experiencing our true nature, which is love. And then we encounter something, typically someone, but it could be something that reminds us, that somehow reminds us, reflects us back to our nature. Now there's this experience of love, but it's experienced as being caused by or in relation to whatever has created that trigger, right? Someone can fall in love with a painting. Every time they see this painting, they just feel that, right? So they're feeling, so that falling in love is the experience of encountering something outside yourself that brings you back to what you are. In its root, that's what falling in love is. Then you get some stuff added to it, so immediately there's, out of our separation and our desire for, let's say, heaven, you know, heaven-like state, we're trying to save ourselves from ourselves. So then there's all this fantasy then projected onto that. And all this neediness then gets attached to it, and we're trying to package that and take it home. But the falling in love is something that just happens in a moment. It's this moment of opening into what we are, triggered by another person. And, you know, and so as long as that person can keep triggering that place, there's this sense of being in love with that person. If that were to take you deeper into where you stabilized in this place of love, then you would no longer feel this falling in love, because you would just be love. And then there's sexual attraction. So And that can get confused with love. You know, it's not love, but it becomes, you know, if you think of sexual attraction ultimately being about recreating life, and life being love, then there's some essence of love that sits deep within the consciousness of sexuality, right? But it's not what, but you know, that's not what people are experiencing. But it's part of the inner, it sort of feeds it from the background. But sexual attraction is, you know, is basically hunger. You know, you're hungry for something, and it doesn't need to be this perfect polarity. You know, if you're hungry for, let's say, a hamburger, and you're walking down the street and all you see are pizzerias, you know, you might just go for a pizzeria, and you know, and you know, and that's going to make your hunger, you know, feel good. So you know, people, and if you consider that we have a lot of different aspects of our personality, different aspects can be attracted to different kinds of people. You know, the idea of this sort of perfect polarity assumes that you're a singular personality, but you're not. You know, you're really a group. You know, you've got different parts of your personality that express through your right side, your male side. You've got different aspects that express through your female side. And different parts of your personality are going to be attracted to different kinds of people. At the same time, you may have a dominant personality aspect that sort of rules your, that for the most part rules your sexuality. Or it may be, you may have situations where that place is attracted to people, and then other parts of your personality sort of weigh in on whether there are other areas that, you know, that are going to work or not work. And, you know, it can get very complicated. I once met this woman years and years ago where I had this intense sense of sexual attraction to her, even though I didn't like her. I had no idea why I was sexually attracted to her that way. Probably some past life memory thing, you know, coming through. And the relationship lasted about a day and a half. It's in spite of that sexual attraction. I really had trouble just being around her. And so, you know, so there are going to be other parts of my personality that are going to be attracted to different kinds of people that I feel more resonance with. And, you know, so it's much more complex than that. But it can be confused with love because of the attachment in it. You know, that sense of need can be felt just so deeply that that it can be confused with, you know, what I am. And of course, usually, you know, well, I don't know about usually, but, you know, pretty often, of course, the two come together. You know, when there's this sense of falling in love, it will activate, you know, the whole system, and, you know, chakras will resonate, and there'll be this desire from the human separation level to sort of consummate that love, you know. So so when there's love, there's going to be sexual attraction in it as well, because if the heart is really attracted in that way, and there's any kind of level of possibility of resonance on a sexual level, it's like the rest of the being wants to get involved in it, in the love. But it doesn't work the same way the other way. Sexual attraction doesn't typically lead to love the way love can lead to sexual attraction.
You mentioned in another podcast you should only sleep with two types of people. You should either be clear that you don't want to be with that person that you sleep with, or you want to be clear that you want to be with that person that you sleep with. Can you elaborate that a bit?
Yeah, so that comes back to the chords. So if you sleep with someone that you know you don't want to be with, then you're not going to be as influenced by the power of the chord, because the chord makes it so that you remember in the story I told earlier, I couldn't get this woman out of my mind and wanted to see her again, you know, where before I had, you know, very little interest in her. So the chord is actually creating this magnetic kind of attachment. And so if you're not sure if you want to be with a person and then you sleep with them, the chord afterwards is going to tell you you are interested and you want to be with them, right? So it's going to influence your decision. And then, you know, 10 years later, you know, you wake up one morning and you go, you know, what the f was I thinking? And so, you know, it's going to tend to pull you into a relationship that if you'd spent more time with the person before sleeping with them, you might have decided not to go that route. Right. And, yeah, so even, and there'll be the tendency, even if you know you don't want to be with that person, once you sleep with them, you know, there's glue there out of that cord, and perhaps out of that chakra resonance as well, especially the first chakra starts to really connect. And so it creates a sense of connection that easily can unfold towards relationship that may be a relationship that you would have never have gotten into if you had more time to spend with the person first.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean for promiscuity and all the neo-tantra workshops?
Yeah. So what happens when people are being really promiscuous is that they're taking that attachment energy and they're spreading it around, so it's not as fixated in one place. I met a woman at some concert not that long ago, and it looked to me like she was involved in some kind of, you know, sort of sexual grouping, you know, and she was going to move to Brooklyn. And she said she had, I forget, something like a dozen or more, you know, roommates for the apartment. And I said, how do you get that many people into, you know, one apartment? She said, oh, most of us just share a bed. And you know, it was very interesting for me because I could see she had this sort of non-attachment around sexuality. And part of that had to do with, so the neediness for, the neediness comes out of a need for connection. And so, you know, by having this group, that group in itself sort of satisfied a lot of that need for connection. So it wasn't expressed as much through sexuality and gave her more freedom to be, you know, non-attached on a sexual level. But that's unusual. I would also say, though, that with that, there was a way that she also was, in that the way she detached, there was a certain disconnect there as well. You know, there was, it like, you could see that the way she organized all that made it so that she couldn't really be really present with another person. You know, she was like, you know, kind of like your idea of kind of soul grouping. It's as if she shifted her identity to group, which then stopped her from, in her individualness, being fully present with, you know, with someone else. And it's different from being in oneness. You know, it was, you know, she was in a separate group. Right.
Would you say that you can be more present and have a deeper connection or a better connection if you only have one sexual partner versus many?
So this is the, kind of goes into the whole, polyamorphous kind of, area. And I have met a few people who this works well for. The other people I've met who are practicing that, what I see is a lot of avoidance in it, a lot of avoidance of vulnerability and it's like, well, if this doesn't work, I've got that. So there's something safer in it, and I don't have to be as vulnerable here because I've got this here as well. And I've seen where all the issues that that raises around jealousy and attachment, and because now, I mean, I'm attached to you and you're sleeping with whoever. And I've seen where that has been a very good vehicle for just looking at our stuff, right? But in terms of it working as a loving, harmonized situation, I've only seen that a couple of times. But, it's a possibility.
What are the most common reasons that people work with a vortex healer to work on their romantic relationship?
Sorry, what's the most common reason?
Yeah, what are the most common reasons why people would use vortex healing to work on their relationships?
Well, because they want their relationships to be better, the relationships are a great source of drama, and of course they're at the center of one's life, because typically people are living with their partners, or at very least seeing them a lot, and the main focus of their emotional energy gets entangled with their partner, and but from a vortex healing perspective, we're not working on ourselves in order to have better relationships. We're using relationships, to work on ourselves, because the goal, so to speak, is not to have a better relationship, but to be, as clear and, and as deep into our awakening as we can, and then and to experience life, including our relationships, that way. So in the beginning, in the beginning, just in general for the path, we work on ourselves in order to get out of suffering and in order to become better people, let's say. But after awakening, then we're working on ourselves because our stuff pulls us out of our awakeness. It's a different dynamic.
Are there generally any specific protocols like you would recommend? For example, that I work with my girlfriend that would be interesting to improve relationships or the energy?
Well, one thing that's always useful, of course, is couples therapy, which then helps you to become aware of your patterns that you're projecting onto your partner. And then, you use your vortex healing tools to work on those. But otherwise, I mean, we have certain tools like Merlin's Healing Grid that you can use to, you can put the relationship in that grid, and it helps to kind of harmonize things. But, the deeper play is, of course, seeing, you know, what you're projecting. And in particular, keeping an eye on how your neediness is playing out in the relationship and how you're reacting to how your partner is dealing with that. That's usually where the fire is.
So you would suggest to start with, I guess, like psychological work about the relationship and then see what comes up. And whatever comes up, this might be something to work on with Vortex.
Well, if you're not clear what your patterning is, then, you know, that kind of work can help you to do that. I used to have this story. I call it chocolate and jelly beans. So two people meet and they fall in love. And let's say the guy's got jelly beans, the woman has chocolate, and the guy really likes chocolate. Guy really likes chocolate, and the woman really likes jelly beans. And so in the beginning, there was this nice sharing of chocolate and jelly beans and nourishing. But, you know, the thing is it's not really satisfying the neediness. You know, it seems to at first, because the person has more of that love that's keeping them feeling satisfied. But, you know, the neediness, the separateness sort of is going to raise its face at some point. And maybe the guy feels like she's not giving him as much chocolate as she used to. Or that the chocolate isn't the same quality of chocolate as it used to. So maybe he says something and they start to have a fight, but, you know, he maybe just starts to withhold jelly beans, or maybe just her, not as much of her favorite color jelly bean, you know, and this goes on, and then there starts to be some drama around it. And, you know, 10 years later, you know, they're fighting about who's taking out the garbage, but they're really still fighting about chocolate and jelly beans.
So, in the beginning of a relationship, what brings people really together?
So, it gets set up on deeper levels. And when you meet someone by accident, it's never an accident. You know, there's always some kind of setup that's going on. And like with my ex, my wife who I was married to for 20 years, you know, there were visions and dreams involved with the other person. There was all this stuff that preceded the actual meeting. And you know, we both had actually had a dream of the other person before we met. And that was with me living in the US and her living in Switzerland. And there was a lot of those kinds of threads that were going on without going into all the details about it. And including a vision that a psychic friend of mine had of my ex, in which she described her to me even before we met. And so, you know, things like that show that there's play going on in other levels. At the same time, when we start to tap into that play, it's easy to take it as what will happen as opposed to a possibility for what will happen. So, for instance, an earlier relationship that I had, we both had dreams of these kids that we were going to have, except we never stayed together, never had those kids. Right? So, you know,
so you can have like a divine message, but it's a possibility, and there's still a part where you feel you can influence that unfolding of that. Like you can still change what happens.
Yeah, that's another question. That's a free will question.
Yes.
Rather than say that you can still change what happens, I would just say that what happens can still change.
From your vision, yeah.
Right. The vision is showing you possibility, and that, and you seeing that possibility itself impacts your consciousness in particular ways that then becomes part of the basis for what unfolds after that. So it's, it gets complicated. But there, to me, there are no accidents. And so if you're supposed to meet a particular person, like I was obviously supposed to meet my ex, and we were in two different countries, and we met in a third country. We actually met in Germany. And I was originally planning to go somewhere else, and ended up there.
It's funny, it reminds me so much of the story of my girlfriend and me, because we are also both from, she's from Ukraine, I'm from Germany, but I lived in Estonia and we met in the Netherlands. And it really felt also like the divine put us in front of each other, because the chances of us meeting would be so super rare, and so many unplanned things happened in the weeks and on the day that we met. So, yeah, I can see the setup for us.
And a setup doesn't necessarily mean that things are going to be easy. It could be just the opposite. It can be completely opposite, that set up, for you to just have a lot of work to do, which actually brings me to a very important point, which is, in terms of question, what's the basis for leaving a relationship? So, most people will say, well, if the relationship is bad or it's abusive, or if I'm not happy, or a lot of list of reasons to leave. I would disagree with all of them. For me, there's only one reason to stay in a relationship and one reason to leave a relationship. And the answer is the same, which is that truth says this is where you need to be, or this is where you need to leave. You could be in a lovely relationship and have no growth going on because it's just sort of easy, and there's nothing challenging in it, and it's just, there's no growth in it. And 30 years later, you'll still be in the same place. And you could be in a relationship that is breaking your heart every day, and you're doing tremendous amount of work in it, so that emotional pain is neither a reason to stay nor a reason to leave. At some point in the middle of that, you might continuously have stay, 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 and then one day it just says, now go. Right? Of course, that requires one to be able to listen inside. And what I suggest for people in general, let your mind is going to, of course, be thinking about it over time. Should I stay? Should I leave? There's all these factors, factors, factors. And let your mind do its thing until, and in fact, really get into it until your mind is exhausted. And then sit quietly and wait for truth to just emerge. Just invite it. And, because if you make up your mind to leave or stay, afterwards you can look at that and say, I should have thought of this, I should have thought of that, I should have changed my mind should have been different. But if you get it from truth, there's no regret, there's no looking back. There's nothing else you could have done. That was the truth of what you needed to do, regardless of whatever was going to come from that. And then one can expand on that and say, not just be or leave relationships based on the truth, but live your whole life that way, make every decision that way. And that takes you, you know, deeper into an awakening process that, you know, then, you know, the divine is guiding your life instead of your mind.
Beautifully said. Yeah, I feel the truth in that. I could see this, especially roughly 1 year ago when I separated from my ex-partner. And we were both thinking about it a lot to separate. But at one point I was in a retreat on an island in Greece, and I just saw the vision for us to live separate lives. I saw how it would be the best thing for us to separate, for the both of us. And it was really not a decision that I made. It was really, I felt the divine guidance of that, that we would both step into our higher purpose if we leave each other. And it was painful at first, but now looking back after a year, I can see we both stepped into our higher purpose. We both have a much more beautiful life right now. Well, thank you so much, Rick.
Thank you.
For this podcast.
Thank you. A pleasure.
So if people want to work with a vortex healer, where can they learn more about vortex healing?
So we have a main website, which is vortexhealing.org. And for anyone wanting to learn it, there's information there about that. And for anyone wanting just a session, and vortex healing works very well at a distance. You don't need to be in person. There's a button called Find a Healer. And you can see, you know, what level of training people have had. I would suggest choosing someone, whether they're local or not, who has, you know, our highest level of training, which it tells you in the description there. And there's a phone contact. And you can just contact them.
Awesome. Thank you.
Great
Rick.
Stuff. Thank you.
I'm not on that list yet, but maybe in some years.